The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we'll talk about it coming up. Are you dating? Huh? Are you looking for Mr. Right? Or maybe Mrs. Right? Yeah, I want to explore the challenge of being faithful to your walk with Christ in dating. I have two people in the studio with me who are going to be sharing, well, their own experiences, and we'll be joined by a couple guests, but I want to hear from you as well. And we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. Also coming up, Dr. Ann Cavoukian is going to be stopping by. I don't know if you heard that Apple announced the rollout of a new feature that is winning both praise, but also getting, it's raising some concern. It's a tool that scans photos and text messages, and it looks for images of sexual child abuse. You probably think, oh, that's a good thing. Well, we'll take a look at privacy. As always, I think that is really important. And again, we want to root out any opportunity where there is abuse or any sort of, immoral type of behavior, but child sexual abuse is a serious problem in our country, really around the world. It's not just here. It's only made worse, I think, today because of the easy availability of digital photography that can be transmitted around the world in seconds after the photo's been taken. And, governments and ordinary people, they've been after tech giants to try to combat this. And this week, I saw a story that I thought, let me share this with you. Let me get an expert on, too. We'll talk about what the pros and cons of this really are. I saw a story that Apple is now getting in on the game. And I'm a big Apple guy. I got to be honest with you. I've got an iPhone. I've got, there's an iPad. There's a MacBook Pro. There's a Mac. I like Mac. I got an Apple TV. I mean, I like their products. I like their design. But I also like my privacy, okay? I also like my privacy. What they're doing right now is raising some privacy concerns. Apple's developed software that allows it to scan photos on your phone. Oh, and by the way, also in your iCloud. And if you're not familiar with the iCloud, that's where all the stuff on your laptop or your phone goes. It's where it's kind of your backup. Instead of having a hard drive that backs up your stuff, you can back it up in the cloud. And what they're going to be doing is looking for pictures via a mathematical formula. And if you have any pictures on your phone or in the cloud that match, well, a person will be alerted and he or she will do a review. And if there are a problem, there's a problem with the picture, then Apple's going to alert the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children and possibly law enforcement. Now, you might be saying, that's great. Maybe it is. But again, I come back to the privacy part of this conversation. It does raise privacy concerns. According to Reuters, Apple employees are really concerned about it. Apple employees. There's an app used by the company for internal communications called Slack. And Reuters reported that there's a channel dedicated to this topic at Apple. And they had something like 800 messages that had gone out on it and about this new software. The main concern is that countries like, let's say, China, right, or Russia, or Cuba, or Iran, or other authoritarian type of governments, that they're going to get their hands on it, and they're going to use it. They're going to deploy it against their own citizenry. And I can clearly see how that can happen, right? And, of course, who's to say somebody at the NSA, right, the National Security Agency here in our own country, wouldn't do the same thing? So, look, I'm just throwing this out for thought and for discussion. If you want to get in and sound off as well, the number here is 888-914-9149. I've invited to join me today Dr. Ann Cavoukian, and I always appreciate her perspective. She's a champion of privacy. She's the Executive Director of Global Privacy and Security by Design Center. And grab a pen and paper. I'll get you plugged in. Her website is GPS by Design, gpsbydesign.com. And she's just has done incredible things in terms of creating a framework for privacy and data protection. And she joins us today. Good to have you back, Doctor. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Drew. Hi.
Yeah, I saw the story, and I'm really torn. I got to be truthful and honest about this. I mean, I if there's child porn out there or there's abuse, I wanted a bravo. Let's get whoever is the purveyors of this stuff, right? But then on the other side of that equation, I could see how this tool, which is inherently neutral, can really be used for illicit and you know, wrongful purposes. Child sexual abuse is a serious problem, but is this the way to deal with it? What are your thoughts on what Apple's now doing?
And I agree with you. Apple took a very honorable action in trying to detect child sexual abuse, which is horrible, of course. So what they were trying to do is indeed very honorable to help these poor children who are being abused. And you might say, well, who could possibly object to that? The problem is Apple has built itself on privacy. They offer end-to-end encryption like no other. A few years ago, I think about 5 years ago, when James Comey was attorney general, he went to Apple and he said, look, we arrested this guy, his iPhone, and we can't get into it because it's end-to-end encrypted. Would you open it for us? And Apple said, we can't do that. We offer total privacy. And they said, but surely you could figure out how to do it. They said, we don't do that. We respect privacy above everything else. So you see, that's the background. Yeah. Apple has always walked the high road on taking the high road on privacy. Yeah. And now with doing this, it's not so much that people object to this particular thing because everybody wants child sexual abuse ended. It's that it opens the door for others, like you mentioned, China, Russia, other countries, to use it for other purposes that are outrageous. That's the problem here.
Yeah, my guest today, Dr. Ann Cavoukian, and if you want to join us, the number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. How would a country, let's just say like China or Russia, be able to get hold of this software? They just reverse engineer it, or they manufacture the... How do they use it?
I personally have no idea because I don't do it myself. Right. But the ability to get in through a back door, which is this is being construed as a back door, and this kind of hacking takes place with brilliant minds. You know, you may have heard that Israel has released this thing called the NSO, which gets into so many databases. And there's all kinds of things. So the fact that China and Russia and all these have brilliant, brilliant coders and hackers, now they see there is a gate of entry, if you will, where there wasn't one before. So they will go there, open it up, and code. The code will reveal so much and will open up many other doors in terms of end-to-end encryption that they can break into.
That's fascinating. All right, let's grab a call or two. Our number here, if you want to get in on the conversation, 888-914-9149. Love to hear from you. We'll take your questions and also your experiences. Diana is listening in Chicago. Diana, thanks for calling in. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. I had a picture on my phone, and I had heard about the Apple having an app that you can put on your phone. And I just declined on putting that app on my phone because I started getting concerned about it because I have a grandson who had these marks on his bottom. Just it was two marks recently, both the same space, you know, on each side of his butt. And it looked like it could have been a burn mark on both sides, just little round burn marks. And I watch him. It didn't happen on my watch. That's why I took the picture of it. I wanted to show it to my husband. I was concerned about it. But I took those off my phone, and I'm sure it goes in the iCloud anyway, but you know, I didn't want to get that app on my phone. I didn't right away when I heard about it. I just, you know,
Well, Diana, thank you. First of all, two things. I mean, keep an eye on that because if there's abuse, you want to make sure you follow up with that. I'm glad you're diligent to that.
That's the exact concern, though. I'm so glad you expressed it. She expressed it because there are, you know, we have pictures of adorable children who are doing funny little things that somehow could be construed as potentially problematic or, you know, it's not black and white. That's the problem.
Yeah, I think about that. How many parents have taken the pictures of their children, you know, playing in a pool or the bathtub or something like that was completely innocent, but today it would look pornographic perhaps, you know? And if that's on your phone and it gets scanned now, somebody's investigating and looking into you and it's innocent. Yeah, that's a problem. Our number here, 888.
Imagine the horror of that.
Yeah, it would be humiliating, wouldn't it? That'd be horrible.
Horrible.
If you want to join us again, I'll go to the phones in a second. 888-914-9149. are there ways we can address this issue? I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, we want security. We want privacy. Yeah. We want to root this out. Are there ways that we can address the whole child sexploitation or exploitation issue that does not invade people's privacy?
Not in the way that Apple has construed. I mean, this is a very difficult issue. Law enforcement, of course, if the police have any kind of evidence of a potential crime involving children especially, they can get a court order immediately, get a warrant, and then they can go in and investigate. But absent that, just to send pictures from online activities is a nightmare. That's why, you know, Apple employees, something like 800 emails, well, Apple employees were very worried about this and they didn't like it.
Yeah. So, you know, I talk about authoritarian countries like China and Russia and Iran and these other nations you can see using this. In our own country, you know, I always want to, I love our nation. I love the freedoms and liberties we have, and I'm a champion of them. But how much of a chance is there that Western countries, let's say U.S., Canada, they would pick up this type of technology and spy on their own citizens? I mean, we had that situation with the NSA. Yeah. I mean, does it go on? Yeah. What do you know? What do you think?
Well, and they're not going to call it spying, but they're going to say it's law enforcement. But law enforcement, the reason there are controls on law enforcement and why you need to go to a judge and get a warrant before you can gain access to evidence is because we value our freedom. Our freedom is essential, and privacy forms the foundation of our freedom. So we want to make sure that if law enforcement encroaches on our freedom, that they have very legitimate reasons, and that's why they need to get a warrant. We don't want to weaken that.
All right. I could not agree with you more. You know, you and I have spoken in the past about social credit scores over in China and how China has this database of its citizens and things along those lines.
Awful.
I would see this as just a natural extension of social credit scores, right? I mean, not only your monitor everywhere you go, but I would think it would make sense. I want to know what you're looking at, what you're doing, and we want to chronicle you. So, and if that's happening in China, I wonder how long before it comes to the U.S. if we ever go down that path. Do you have any concerns about that? Do you have any concerns about the social?
Oh, I hate social credit scores are outrageous. The government in China is making all these assumptions about their citizens, which are outrageous. I think I mentioned to you the story about this brilliant student who finishes high school. He wants to go to university. He applies to universities.
Right.
He gets rejected from all the universities. Why? Because the social credit scores of his parents were considered to be unacceptable. They were jaywalking too much or whatever. It's ridiculous.
Silly. All right, let's grab a few calls. I only have Dr. Kavoukian for a short time. If you want to get in, good time. It's 888-914-9149. We'll go to Bozeman, Montana. Steve is joining us from that beautiful state. Hi, Steve.
Hi, everybody. Drew, thank you so much. Your show is really important.
Thanks.
And I enjoy listening to it so much.
Thank you.
Drew, one of the biggest things that I took away while studying American history, et cetera, the fact that people were, at the beginning of this country, willing to put freedom above everything, even their own lives.
Yeah.
Statements like, give me liberty or give me death. Although in this day and age of instant communication, everything that you do is recorded.
Yeah.
It's hard to hold on to those cornerstone American values of we're going to work our hardest to get rid of the scourge of all these terrible things. But we believe in freedom. We believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness above all else. And we're willing to sacrifice for it. And we're willing to find other ways. And we're going to push our intellectual abilities to find other ways that don't violate people's right to privacy and right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
So I just think we're in an interesting time where we're faced with things, and not that it's easy, but an easier solution is starting to encroach on some of these liberties that we used to hold above everything else. So that's all I'd like to say.
Thanks
for all you do.
Thank you, Steve.
I appreciate
Thank you so much. Those are wonderful comments that you understand the value of freedom and how essential it is to keep our society open and free.
Yeah, I think you said it best. I mean, the quote of the day for me is when you said privacy forms the foundation of our freedom. It really does. And I think people, They take that for granted. We don't really understand that, but it's so true. Pat is listening in San Diego, California. Pat, hi, you're on the air with Dr. Ann Cavoukian.
Hi, I just have a comment that as a retired nurse, you know, at times we would take pictures in the hospital to document potential abuse of children and even adults. And would that not be a HIPAA violation?
Oh, right. Oh, of course. I hadn't even thought of that. That would be. But you're doing it for, you know, all the right reasons. You want to document it. But yes, of course.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how that works. If you're in a medical facility, you're a nurse, you've been asked to document this patient that has come in. I guess it belongs to the patient. And you're right. If somebody does scan those documents, they're invading that person's private medical records. So that's a great. A lot of questions stem from these things. You start to go down this path. Christina in Batavia, Illinois. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, crystal clear.
Okay. I apologize. I'm on Bluetooth, but I'm driving.
Oh, perfect.
So I just had a comment, and I'm driving, so I can't fact-check myself, but I seem to remember that there was a terrorist attack at an office building in California, and law enforcement was trying to get the phone records from these terrorists, and Apple refused to cooperate. They said, no, that's private information. So is anyone calling them out on flip-flopping?
Great point. Doctor, you're familiar with that story, I'm sure.
Yes. And, you know, Apple held its ground because it always has prided itself that they protect privacy above everything else, end-to-end encryption. We don't break our encryption. So now this position is viewed as dramatically opposing the traditional position that they've taken and they've developed so much people following them because that's what they value.
Yeah, that was the, if I remember correctly, government came to Apple requesting that they unlock this Pensacola shooting suspect's iPhone. They wanted to see if there were any other, you know, threats of terrorism that could come. And the company said, look, we don't have a back door to this. I think it was eventually hacked, though, wasn't it? Didn't the FBI or didn't somebody eventually break that and get into that phone? Are you familiar with that at all?
I think they got someone from Israel. They have a company there.
Those Israelis are something else, aren't they? Oh, my God. Right. They can get into anything.
You betcha.
Keep my passwords on a piece of paper, right? That's what I'm going to do. That's crazy. Something else. Doctor, always good to have you here. I appreciate it. Your website, too. Let me give it a big plug here, too, because I love what you do. Why don't you get everyone plugged into what you're all about and how they can get more info?
Thank you. It's GPS by Design Center, and center is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E .com.
And what's it all about? What do you do there?
What it's about is all about both privacy and security, privacy and data utility, how you can do both. It's not the one interest versus another. We have to embrace privacy and the value of data that businesses and governments and citizens want to extract. We can do both. It's not an either-or. It's not a win-lose proposition. We show you how to do both in what's called a positive-sum manner, privacy and, not privacy versus.
Yeah, I love it. And, you know, you're not against, you know, technology, because I remember you and I were talking on the air because I was a little hesitant about, you know, going through the – I do a lot of international travel at times. And, and you know, okay, you got the TSA, you know, shorter line, but then you have what's the one for global entry? This is the word I'm looking for. But you use global entry all the time, right? And you don't have any concern about that.
No, because it's one-to-one. Yep. I have global entry because I used to travel a lot before COVID.
Right.
But they have my biometric. They have my facial image, which I have given to them.
Yep.
And nobody else gets it. And when I go to the airport, they compare the picture that I had sent them to my live face. It's called one-to-one comparison. That is an acceptable use of biometrics. It's excellent. It's the one-to-many that are problematic when they scan your facial image with compared against thousands of others they have on file. It is so inaccurate. 81% false positive rates where people are falsely accused of being the bad guy or the person of interest, and they're not. No, one-to-one is completely different in terms of global entry. Totally private, totally secure.
So no one can hack that, take your image and your biometrics and use it in some nefarious way?
I'm not going to say no one can ever do it because you never know.
Yeah.
But it is extremely, extremely private and sends it as secure, and they, touch wood, have not had any problems with that yet.
Well, that sounds good. I love that about you. You're balanced, you know, you're not extreme. Hey, doctor, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for making time
My
for
pleasure.
Us. I always enjoy our conversation. It's fun. We'll
always
catch
a
up.
Pleasure speaking to you, Drew.
All right, enjoy your weekend. That's Dr. Ann Kavoukian. She's Executive Director of the Global Privacy and Security by Design Center. And center, as she pointed out, is spelled C-E-N-T-R-E, not E-R. All right, so you can get it. But the website to go to, gpsbydesign.com. I'm going to take a short pause when we come back. I want to talk to a couple people here in the studio with me. They're single and ready to mingle. Talk to them right after this.
Tweet us your prayer intention anytime on Twitter at Drew Mariani Show.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. You know, I was in the studio earlier in the week, actually on Monday. You know, I had worked for about 6 years with Jake Moore. He was a producer on the show for a long time, and he's a brilliant audio guy. I mean, he was a great producer, along with my producer, Tom Siskevich. I have a great team. And Jake was given an opportunity, and he was transitioning. So, you know, I had the opportunity to you're laughing at the word transitioning. Yeah, that might be an appropriate word today. I mean, the society has co-opted the language. Got to be careful the words I use. Jake moved on to a better opportunity, or another opportunity. I don't think it was better. I said, Jake, you know, you're going to miss it here. So I wish Jake the best. But Maggie worked with Dave Ramsey for a while, and she's with us today. So her very first day, she came in, and Jake, she shadowed him, and Jake kind of showed her how the sausage was made here at the show. And I went away on vacation and came back, and the first day that Maggie and I worked together, flowers arrived in the studio. And I'm thinking, wow. I said, this is, you know, what's that, a boyfriend? Somebody? Is it a suit or somebody you like? And she laughed.
They're from my mom.
Yeah, they're from your mom. I'm like, they're from your mom. And the card said what? Good luck?
Good luck, sweetie.
That's great. It was sweet. You got great parents to go ahead and do that. So I was just asking Maggie, you know, a little bit about it. Apparently you're single. And yes. Patrick Alok, who's here in my studio too, he's on my phone. He's been single too for a while. And Patrick, you've experienced everything from, you know, dates to being ghosted. So you've been on, you know what that's like. And Maggie, your own experience. You told me now that you've met somebody that you kind of like.
Yeah.
I think, if I can speak about that, I don't know. Sure. We haven't talked about this conversation before now, so I hope I'm not crossing any boundaries.
Yeah, putting me on the spot always.
But in a few minutes, Jason and Kristalina Everett are going to stop by, and I thought it'd be great to talk about dating and being faithful to, you know, to Christ in that process. Because you made a comment to me, because I said, "Oh, is it from a guy?" No, she's. I can't tell you how hard it is to be a single woman and try to be faithful, because the challenges that are out there and the mentality of the culture and men. Sure. What's it like for you to be a single, attractive woman and, you know, try to date?
Wow. I mean, I could probably write a novel about my experiences. I'm going to just kind of cut to the chase, because there's a lot of expectations out there in the world. And I think if you're a young Catholic, you really have to make up your mind whether or not you personally will stand for birth control or not, because that really determines how you operate in dating. So you might be interacting with people who have been used to others in relationship who can do whatever they want and there's no repercussions. So when you end up facing these conflicts in relationship, it can be really hard. I had a guy tell me once that we had been seeing each other for a month, and he said, this is the longest I've gone without sleeping with someone.
Wow.
And he said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to bow out. And I was like,
so
well,
he left. Wow.
I was like, you know what? It's better to know now on the front end. Thank you for telling me that. But this issue of virtue and character really comes into play when you're getting to know somebody, and what are they there for?
Yeah, I'm just getting to know you, to be honest. I mean, you and I have only worked together for a short period of time, so this is a learning experience for me, too. Were you always this way, or did you have a conversion in your life?
No. I mean, here's the thing. I've made every mistake in the book. I mean, if you had known me 10 years ago, it would be a very different story. And I had a major conversion at 25. And, wow. And the last 8 years of my life, I have spent kind of going back to square one as an adult, going, okay, how am I supposed to be in relationship with someone else? And lots of trial and error. It's every relationship is a new experience, right? And you gain new wisdom from that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the guy that gets you is a lucky man.
Oh,
that's for sure. That's for sure.
That's true.
And she's intelligent and beautiful. Watching a lot of calls now from listeners saying, hey, I'm single. I'm looking for it's really crazy because, you know, I know so many single people today. I don't know what it is. Who are really looking for that future spouse or that partner that has virtue, that wants to have Christ as part of the relationship, and it's hard. Patrick, I know you're the same way. I mean, it's been almost the same old story
for 5 years now.
I've golfed. You and I have gone golfing several times. We've talked about it. And you've experienced everything from dates and women telling you they're going into religious life to being totally ghosted. Tell me a little bit about what you're going through.
Yeah, sometimes it gets, you know, borderline, I guess, depressed. Like, am I going to find that, you know, special someone? And there are times when I'm like, I just want to maybe not give up per se, but just, you know, just give it a rest. And just, you know, maybe I should, you know, like what I'm doing right now, you know, being single, whatever. Maybe it's easier and stuff like that. But sometimes, I just miss being with that special someone, and sometimes I think what am I doing wrong?
Yeah. No, you know what?
So I get to that point where what am I doing wrong? And I'm getting at that age where I know it's a little different with men and women, but still, I'm like, when I see people get married, I'm like, and they're younger than me, I'm like, like my brother, he's getting married in January. He's 3 years younger than me.
I think part of your faith walk then is learning to be like genuinely happy and celebrate those people for that accomplishment, and yet not mourn where you are personally at that time, you know?
Yeah.
Because that really like shows growth.
I had a former producer, Maggie, that worked with me. I'll keep her name anonymous. It doesn't matter. I mean, people probably know the story, but she was single. And when she came here, beautiful girl, I mean, smart too. And she told me once, because she was praying for her spouse, she says, Lord, please, I'll go into religious life. She says, I'll get married. I just don't want the single life. That was her prayer. Like, she just did not, she was happy to either get married or go into the single life. She was praying for a spouse, but she was willing to go into religious life. She just did not want to live a single life. And there is such thing as a single vocation, though, too.
Sure.
I mean, sometimes God calls people to serve the kingdom in that particular vocation. I guess the big question is, how do you discern all that, you know? And that's a tough thing in your walk, you know?
Yeah.
And look, God's timing's not ours either. I mean, we want everything right away. I always want everything right away.
Amen.
I'm a very impatient person that way. But I pray all my answers now, right? But, you know, the Lord might have that perfect somebody down the road for you. It might be tomorrow. It might be a month from now. Maybe it's next year, but that person is in the, you know, it's in your path and it's coming. If that's God's will for you, you just got to trust and make that walk daily. What I found interesting looking at numbers, you know, the rate of men entering the seminary today, if you're looking at vocations to the priesthood and the number of women being ordained, it's way down. So are the numbers of women answering the call to the convent. But the number of people entering the vocation of marriage, that's also way down. People are not getting married. Were you and I talking about that? Who was I talking to about that, Maggie, where millennials are just no longer getting married? They just have chosen. Maybe it wasn't you. I don't know. I was having a conversation with somebody who was saying, you know what? We've decided that we're not going to get married. I mean, we're done with, you know, the dating, the relationship, this whole type of thing. And you know what? I think it was Timmery's show. Believe it or not, I was in my car the other day. I was running an errand somewhere, and Relevant Radio was on, and I thought I heard a stat. Maybe it was her show, where the comment was that a quarter of millennials will never get married. A quarter of them. And I'm thinking, what happened to marriage in this country? In the 1970s, there were little more than, I think, 425 Catholic weddings, right? Almost 500,000 of them. Last year, 132,000. I mean, it's stunning. That's a 69% drop in 50 years, 69%. So I don't know whether we have a failure in catechesis, an understanding of what the sacrament is all about, whether the culture is that dominant, whether people, this is the byproduct, the collateral damage of a divorce culture. When no-fault divorce entered in and people come from broken families, they don't want this. Maybe the lowering of the sexual bar once you cohabitate and start living and sleeping together. Who needs marriage? I can't tell you how many people I know are living together and living like husband and wife, but they don't have the bonds of marriage. So we need more Catholics getting married. The problem, of course, is that the culture is militating against marriage. And it starts with the dating process, you know, and like Maggie was sharing, most guys are like, can't wait this long. See ya. And that's not a great thing. I'm joined today by two people. And Maggie and Patrick, feel free to join this conversation as well. You might know the names. I'm sure you know the names. Jason and Crystalina Everett, they've spoken on about five continents. They've reached over 1 million people. And they are great promoters of something that's lacking in the culture today. And it's so, so important. And that's virtue. The virtue of chastity, right? And Jason is the author of multiple books. And if you want to check out one that I think is a pretty good read for you, especially on this topic, check out How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. And check out their ministry, too. There's more resources there at chastityproject.com. Hey, Jason, Crystalina, good afternoon. Good to have you both with us today.
Thanks for having us on.
Thank you for having us.
Well, you heard part of the conversation here, both Maggie and Patrick. You know, they're and Patrick, you're 30. How old are you?
37.
Maggie, I won't now. Ask you because you don't have to answer that. But
she's younger than me. She's younger than me.
Lady never tells her age.
She's younger than me.
So, but here's the thing, you guys. You know, you're not right out of high school anymore, and no. You're looking for these relationships. It's hard. Give me your take on this, Jason, Crystalina. I mean. What are you seeing in the culture at large? What advice do you have both for Maggie and for Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, this isn't just something for, you know, teens, high school, college students. I'm having women sometimes approach me after my seminars who are in their 70s or 80s, you know, who have lost a spouse. And, you know, these women will say to me, hey, you know, I thought it was going to be different dating around in my 70s, but these guys are just as bad as the guys in the 20s, you know, expecting this and that by this date. And these women are like, you know, I don't want to grow old alone, but what do I need to do? And, you know, I think a lot of times during those times of loneliness, you never want to make a major decision during a time of desolation.
Sure.
And you just need to be reassured that you and your standards are not the problem. They're not standing in the way of you finding love. In fact, the standards are the only thing that can safeguard the possibility of love coming into your life. So that's the last thing you want to let go if you want real love.
You know, that's so true, Jason. I feel like I've witnessed so many times friends and family who on the front end have really set those like good boundaries and really explored a flourishing dating relationship with like good morals. And somehow on the other end, when they're married, then that allows them to really explore a wonderful relationship. That when I've witnessed friends who don't have those boundaries up front, marriage is so much tougher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, and you know, marriage is going to be, you know, in my opinion, hard work no matter which way you go. But at least when you're entering it with chastity, you, in a sense, have your eyes more wide open. Because, you know, people will say, well, what if you don't sleep together before you get married? You know, how will you know if you're compatible? Well, the problem is, what if you sleep together before marriage and you think you're compatible just because you're compatible in bed? And you know how to bury problems in the bedroom instead of actually learning, you know, do we know how to argue respectfully? You know, do we have that much in common outside of the bedroom? So once you become that physically intimate with someone, your judgment is toast. And so when it comes to the discerning a spouse, you know, purity of heart, purity of mind is one of the most important assets to discern that vocation with clarity.
Explain to me, guys, if you could. I mean, what are we seeing? Like, I heard the stat the other day. You probably have better data than I do, though, that a quarter of millennials aren't going to get married. What's happening with marriage today, and why is it that I see so many, you know, young people today who are looking for a spouse? Not just young, as you point out. There are many people in their 40s, their 50s, their 60s who are looking for that right partner. What has happened to this institution, and why are people so afraid to engage in it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot is true. This is the first time in history that the majority of Americans are not married. It's never been seen before. To me, the problem is not catechesis. The problem is we've got a lot of people that have grown up now under the no-fault divorce laws, you know, where they've seen divorce in their own family. And they're like, well, that's marriage. Count me out. And I know Kristalina is going to toss in some ideas here, too.
A lot of people are coming to date just broken from the experiences that they've had, from things that they've gotten addicted to, even in high school, and even as young as just even junior high, they're experiencing things now that are going to affect them now. And people don't realize, especially the younger generation, that the decisions that they're making right now are going to affect everything. It truly is a ripple effect. It's not something that's just going to go away or you can just push down and suppress. That eventually it's going to come bubbling out in your life down the road sooner or later. It's going to come back and bite you. And a lot of people right now, I think they try to find their significance in finding that significant other, and they don't want to be lonely and they settle for less. But in all actuality right now, that's not the most important thing maybe that God wants people looking at, because right now in our society, there's so much hurt, there's so much confusion, there's so much going on, and everything seems upside down, that God is calling people to something greater than just being in a relationship. And yes, that is very important, and that is a big deal, and a vocation is a big deal. But maybe right now God is calling them to do something else, because there's so many people with such great need right now that maybe just focus on what God is asking you to do, and he will fulfill you. And when that time is right, he will bring that other person in, but not to get distracted with perpetually looking for that other person, because maybe God has a greater mission for you than that in your life.
I've often found that when you're not looking is when it happens. You know, if you're so
so
focused and so desperate, always on the hunt.
That's right.
It never happens.
Is this the one? Is this the one? Constantly. Is this the one?
And when you don't, all of a sudden that person comes across your path. You're like, wow, this is awesome, right? How do you discern, though? This is a huge question for a lot of people. I'm thinking about Patrick here or Maggie or I know a lot of other people. I have a daughter who's she's 25 or 6, and she, beautiful girl, you know, and she's discerning whether God's calling her to religious life or to you know, be in a relationship. And my advice was to her, you know, go down one path, and if you find that that is not the path God's leading, then you can always try the other. And how do you discern, you know, God's will in your life when it comes to something? So this is huge. I mean, it's a life-altering decision you're going to make, you know, whether to get married or not, or what path you're to take, and how to discern all that. So I don't know who wants to handle that. Jason, Kristalina, whoever wants to take that. What's your advice to those out there on the fence right now saying, I'm not sure what God wants for me?
Well, I'd give you three discernment tips, especially when it comes to dating. First, I would say don't go Lone Ranger. You know, it's just her and I against the world. Like, no, if you look at any president, prime minister, they always surround themselves with a cabinet of advisors that can give them advice when it comes to foreign diplomacy, economic affairs, military intelligence, socioeconomic, whatever it is. And if they know how to listen well, then they're going to govern their people wisely. And in the same respect, if you surround yourself with people whose opinions you respect and admire, and you have the humility to listen to them, they can sometimes see potential in others we can't see, but more often not, they can see the red flags that we overlook. And so make sure you're not just doing discernment all by yourself. Second thing I would say is, like, know what you're looking for beforehand in a future spouse and become that list yourself. And once you understand what those non-negotiables are, no missionary dating. Meaning don't date someone hoping you can fix them and convert them and rehabilitate them, you know, like it's a fix them up property that you fall in love with the idea of its potential and then invest everything in it, you know, trying to flip the house, so to speak. You know, some girls are dating like that, that if the guy was a house, he'd be some like dilapidated haunted crack house in Detroit. And she's thinking, well, we're going to put a new swimming pool in, get brand new curtains. Like, no, you don't want to date your imagination. You don't want to date a project. You want to date a person hoping they're not going to change.
All right. My guests today, Jason Everett and Kristalina Everett, and we'll take your calls, too. I only have a few moments left in today's broadcast, and I do have to take a short pause. If you want to join the conversation, share your experience, maybe ask your question, get some clarity, feel free to dial in right now. It's 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. 914-9149. Taking a look at, well, dating and being faithful to Christ, discerning your vocation. Again, check out the book, How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. It's written by Jason and Jason Everett. Their website, chastityproject.com. We're back with your calls and some more conversation right after this. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, so good to be with you today. Thanks for joining me. You can get in. I have about 10 minutes left, but if you want to join the conversation, it's 888-914-9149. Taking a look at dating today, being faithful to your walk with the Lord, and I know it can be tough. You know, I think about something, and it's always haunted me, something that Sister Lucia once said. She said the final confrontation between the Lord and Satan, it'll be over family and marriage. Right? Satan hates the family. He hates marriage. He hates the byproduct of it, life, right? He hates family and marriage. And that's what Sister Lucia says. And I see this war raging today. There's no question about it. You know, the world, as I said, has been militating against marriage. And where does it begin? It starts in the dating process. We have this hypersexualized culture. We have the culture indoctrinating and teaching our kids things that are antithetical to our faith, to what Christ has taught us. And for the world, you know, dating is a way for a couple to get in bed as soon as they can, to hook up. We live in this hookup culture, right? It's about sex. It's about pleasure. It's about self. For Catholics, you know, dating is supposed to be a means to see if God is calling you together. It's a journey into a beautiful sacrament that will allow you to achieve sanctity and the heights of holiness. And that's where we are today. That's why Satan hates it so much. I've invited to join me today Jason and Kristalina Everts. Everett, I should say. My producer's name was Everts. Everett. And it's good to have. It's so funny. That name, it's old habits are hard to break. They have eight kids, but they are experts on this topic. And I was talking to them during the break. And of course, Jason's the author of a number of books. One of the books they have out is How to Find Your Soulmate Without Losing Your Soul. That was for women. You also have a book for guys as well, don't you, Jason? What's that called? The Dating Blueprint? What's that all about?
Yeah, that's called The Dating Blueprint. We wrote it because the dating book for the girls, the soulmate one, did real well. And people kept saying, where's the book for guys? And, you know, I just put it off. I'm like, well, guys don't read. You know, and then guys kept bugging me like, no, you know, we're literate. Like, we need a book. And so I started writing it and felt like it was missing something. And I realized it was just me giving dating advice to guys, and they don't really care about that. So I decided to get on social media because guys want to know what the women think, but the women don't feel like it's their place to tell guys how they want to be dated. So I look on our social media. We got 100,000 single women following us. I said, hey, ladies, what do you wish guys knew about dating? How do you want to be asked out? How do you not want to be asked out? Dating etiquette, how not to ghost a woman. And I said, girls, just put your comments below. We'll stick it in the book. And within hours, women had submitted like 30,000 words of feedback,
which is
like sipping out of a fire hydrant. But it was gold. And I learned so much writing this book. And so we've been giving it out to guys, and they say, wow, this is just what we needed, the specifics.
I feel bad for some guys. They just don't have game. You know what I mean? I mean, some guys, which is like, you know, I want to help these guys dress better. I want to help them talk better. I'd like to be a coach, you know. But Patrick, you had a question about getting your game on, right?
Jason, Kristalina, sometimes I feel like I have to be on my game, even at like gatherings where like there's other young adults there, and I have to like impress. And I feel like sometimes there's pressure there too, even though it's not a dating atmosphere or anything like that. But you know, when you see young adults, you know, we're all single and all that stuff, I feel like there's pressure there that you have to impress.
Yeah, I think that's very understandable. I think what the women are looking for more than anything is authenticity. Yeah. So like, if you're a dork, just like be a dork. Like if you're like,
I love
be
it.
You, because what they're gonna want to be attracted to is who you authentically
that's
are.
So true.
And if they're not attracted to that, mm-hmm. then it's just a game. So I would say just you be you, and that authenticity will be most attractive to the woman that I think God would have planned for you. And I don't know if Crystal has any thoughts from a woman's perspective, though.
One thing I wanted the listeners to be very aware of, that are dating or that even are married, that are it's going to affect you, is that out of marriage, the devil is going to do everything possible within your dating relationship to get you as close as physically possible. But once you're married, the devil does everything to keep you to as far as physically apart from each other.
That's profound.
And so to be on guard of both of those things, there's flip sides of that coin. And if you really want to know the genuineness of the person that is dating you, and if they really have your best interest at heart and your soul and your heart and just taking your heart seriously, go to adoration. Make sure you're keeping Jesus at the center of your relationship, because if that person doesn't have your best interest, he can't stay there. He can't stay in that light if he's operating out of the dark. And the same thing goes for the woman. If you keep everything in the light, God will reveal all things. If you're supposed to stay together, if you're supposed to separate, whatever it is, or if they have bad vices, they're addicted to porn, whatever it is, but always make sure you're keeping Jesus at the center. And if you're training yourselves as a couple to keep Jesus at the center, when you get married, it will just flow right into that marriage. And that will be a strong marriage if that is the foundation going in.
Such great advice, though. I never heard it put that way. I love that. Something else I come away from today, Satan will do everything he can to get you together intimately before marriage and then try to keep us separate. Let's take a few calls because time will go quick here. Chris is waiting in Orlando to join the conversation. Chris, thanks for calling in.
Yes. Well, you know, listening to even as the conversations continue, there's just so many different things to comment on it. My wife and I are only recently married. We got married this past December. We're in our 40s, early 40s here.
Great.
And, yeah, we were never married before, so there was this disheartened time of, all right, God, I keep feeling family life's my calling. I'm not seeing it. And there was a time of turning to, actually for me it was Psalm 43, I think it is, that was the line about, why I was so disquieted, my soul, put thy trust in God, and having to kind of really put nose to the grindstone. For us, faith really was the center of our foundation.
Awesome.
We prayed together, even in our dating life, and prayed together continually now. We open our days with prayer. But it was part of our conversation that this had to be, this was significant to both of us, and if it wasn't there, all right, you seem like a nice person and all, but it wasn't going to work out. In fact, my wife actually said when we first started to date, was like, if you seem like a nice guy, but if you're not consecrated to our Blessed Mother, we can't date. And I was like, okay.
Wow.
So, and that's that.
Yeah, dove right into it. So,
That's awesome.
Can I give you some advice as a newlywed that I think I wish I would have known and a lot of other people would have known that I think will help a lot of newly married couples is guard your marital relationship, because so many things will try to come between you to separate you. If it is a hobby, if it's a girlfriend, if it is your work, the devil's going to try to just pull you apart, and there's going to start being slow little cracks where you think, oh, it's not that bad, or I'm not spending that much time, or what's it going to hurt? Or this is a really good thing. It's for God. You guard your marital relationship. You always make sure you're touching base, you're making decisions together, and that you don't bring friendships in your marriage or hobbies or whatever it is. You always be on the same page and have 100% transparency. Because the second you don't, and you start just even a little bit, that crack will get bigger and bigger and bigger. And over time, you won't even realize the separation between the two of you. And then the problems will come in that separation.
Right.
So just be careful and be on guard as newlyweds in the rest of your marriage.
For us, it's definitely communication and have made a deliberate prayer to in that so that we can maintain that transparency you're describing there.
That's awesome.
And yes, it's early. We're just getting started.
Chris, thank you.
It will be powerful.
Yeah, it will be. No doubt. Hey, Chris, thanks. I only have a couple minutes. Let me sneak another call in before we run out of time. Nathan is in Austin, Texas. Nathan, you're on the air with the Everts. Good afternoon.
Hi, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I was just going to say, I think some of the things I've heard, especially recently, about why marriage has kind of been going downhill at least for the younger generations, is because of kind of been a byproduct of the culture, and feminism has empowered women so much that, one, they're making a lot more money than they were, and women usually want to marry up, and it's harder to get a guy now to marry up or make more money. But also, because they've been so empowered and stuff like that,
they're
almost unmarriageable, because they have all these expectations. They're not going to be submissive.
Right.
And so, I mean, that's just, not that women are supposed to be submissive, you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying that.
Totally get it.
That whole traditional orientation to the way marriage is supposed to be is kind of anathema to their whole worldview. And then just from my own personal standpoint, I don't think when I was growing up, I really was taught what I really should be looking for. You know what I mean? Either by my parents or by the church or anything else. Sure. It's just like, you know, it's not just finding a pretty girl. It's trying to find someone who's, you know, like I'm trying to raise my kids where I'm saying, look, dude, you need to marry a Catholic girl, or you're going to be in for a world of hurt if y'all don't have very similar worldviews, especially when it comes to faith and things like that. It's going to come up and make your life a living nightmare.
Nathan, thank you. I got to hold you there because time's my enemy, and I'm out of it for the day. Thank you for your call and great comments. Jason, Kristalina, thank you both. Quick plug for their website. Check it out, okay? You'll appreciate it. It's called ChastityProject.com.